You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
So the dominance continues. It continues, and it apparently is not anywhere close to being over. We will get into all of that here coming up in just a couple of moments from now. It is the Dan Patrick Show here, Fox Sports Radio. He's LeVar Arrington. That guy's Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. You can hang out with us as always on the iHeartRadio app and wherever you are, making us a part of your Monday morning. Happy Labor Day to you and yours, and we will take you all the way up until noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific here on Fox Sports Radio. A couple of fired up D1 superstars. LeVar Arrington's Penn State Nittany Lions go into Camp Randall and get it done. Brady Quinn's Notre Dame Fighting Irish get it done against Florida State. You guys got to be in a hell of a mood coming into this week, this week here, huh?
Yeah.
Fired up.
Yeah.
I wish I felt a little better about it. I mean, if it would have been one of those deals where they came back to win, I would have felt better about it. I think giving up the lead that they did, it was frustrating, especially as when you're a touchdown favorite, you're expecting to win. So that's the hard thing for me. I would have really liked to see them cover for some of the bets that I had out there.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, that's all right. I mean, look, but you did the straight-up bet, and I like how you were able to talk people into doing a straight-up bet and getting Florida State fans to not accept the 7.5 points. I do like how you swindled them into making sure that you did a straight-up bet. Because, you know, if they were smart asking for the points. I mean, that was a smart play by them, but you refused to just give them the points, and so you got them to do a straight-up bet, and that's why they've got to wear your jersey. I think that's a good move.
But yeah, it's kind of pathetic, though, that you could brag about winning a bet even though your team lost.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I draw the line. Where I'm like, yeah, I just wouldn't make the bet. If my team was like a 20-point underdog, I just, you know, I wouldn't make the bet. I wouldn't say, oh, I'm going to bet you straight up. I'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to make the bet. I don't feel too good about this.
Well, speaking of blowouts, when's Alabama not going to be good? Like, is that ever going to happen? Is Alabama ever
going to... When Nick Saban leaves.
Yeah, okay, like, it's unbelievable.
They are going to fall off the face of the planet when Nick Saban leaves. But until then, get used to it.
They're unbelievable, man. And look, you got to give Brady Quinn credit. He was on the air. I thought he was... well, listen, I'll be honest with you. I thought, man, you got to get a life. He actually sat and watched the Alabama spring game. And came on the air afterwards. This true story. It came on the air afterwards when we were working radio together on Fox Sports Radio and said, listen, I know I watched the spring game. I know. Knew he was going to get his balls broken, but came out and said, Bryce Young's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. Said, Bryce Young, I'm telling you, he's the next star quarterback in college football. And we are one game into the season, Brady, and he looks legit like the real deal. So a round of applause because you actually called that. You called your shot. I got to give you credit, man.
I mean, hold on now.
I got to give him credit.
Hold on.
We're a week in.
Brady is a super brilliant mind, no doubt about it. But, dude, Bryce Young has been lighting it up for a while.
Yes,
now.
In high school football.
I mean, not just high school football, on a national schedule in high school football. I mean, to come out of the Monarchs program, out of modern day, is highly touted. They were saying that he basically is probably the best quarterback to ever leave modern day. And yes, if you get some time to go Google or Wikipedia quarterbacks from modern day, they got a pretty good stable of guys. So going to Alabama, going to Alabama. What did we say they have? How many years of the top number? What did you say it was, Brady?
It's 9 of the last 11, and the 2 years they were second and fifth. And actually, it actually gets worse. If you go back even further, I think through 14 years, they've never been outside the top five. They weren't number one.
As far as recruiting classes,
like, yes. Like, yes. Last year's class was the highest ever since they've been ranking these recruiting classes.
Let me give you like an example. Like, let me give you a visual, right? That's like being in pitch black darkness, right? And every other team, you're jumping off of the roof of a home, and you're hoping that you land in a hot tub, right? You want to land in the hot tub, not get jacked up, not miss the hot tub.
Right, yes.
This is like jumping off of a roof and there's an entire deep sea ocean beneath you. You're not going to miss. You jump, I know I'm hitting water. You jump some of these other programs, you might hit concrete, right? You are not. Alabama is a can't miss program at this point in time. It's not about what Alabama is going to do. It's about what other players are going to do when they realize they're never going to play for Alabama. That's to me, that's more of the storyline that's surrounding Alabama, because all of these kids can't play. Brady, you ever hear the story? You ever hear this theory that coaches will recruit and get high draft or high recruiting classes, star kids, and some of them, they have no intentions of playing. They just get them on the team so that they don't have to play against them. Did you ever hear that theory?
they stash them, of course. Of course.
Isn't that the craziest thing? Like, I have no intentions of playing all of these guys, but I'm going to get as many of them as I can because I don't want them to go somewhere else and develop at a rival school, a competitive school.
Well, and it works for Alabama because you showcase Jalen Hurts, Mac Jones, and Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
And because obviously the quarterback position is the most important. And I think if you can convince guys to say, look, you don't need to come here and play more than 1 year in order to be a first round pick and in order to be a starter week one in the NFL as a rookie, because Mac Jones is doing it. You know, Tua Tagovailoa was able to play through injuries and go and do it. I mean, they've got every recruiting pitch you could imagine. And, oh, by the way, we've won 6 of the last 12 national championships. So that kind of plays a factor, too. But here's the reality. Is the comments I made about Bryce Young had nothing to do with modern day. There's plenty of kids who have been highly recruited. I mean, Spencer Rattler's the betting favorite. DJ Uiagalelei was the second favorite. Bryce Young,
he's
the third as far as odds are for the Heisman, at least before week one. And that had more to do with what you're saying about Alabama than anything we've seen from Bryce Young.
True.
Because I would say this, like, if you were watching college football this year, and I think a lot of people would say this on social media, which I hate to reference that, but there was some truth to this. We built up a lot of quarterbacks in the offseason, and they did not look very good in week one. And the truth is, that's okay. That's okay. But if this is where this young man, if this is his starting point, what we saw him do versus Miami, then it's scary to think what's to come later on this season. I mean, they play Mercer this weekend. Mm. Lord have mercy on Mercer.
Yeah.
Because that is – I don't know that Bryce Young will play more than a quarter. I would be shocked if he played into the second half at all, maybe even in the second quarter. Like, it might look like he goes 13 for 14 with 3 touchdowns. I mean, literally in the first quarter, and that's it. Get the next guy in there so you don't potentially get him hurt. But I just, you know, there's something about this kid, and I said it on TV, he reminds me of Russell Wilson. It's his poise, his accuracy, and he's not very tall.
No,
and obviously
he's
young, so he can fill out some. But it's the way he maneuvers the pocket and his feel for windows and everything else. He's like a weird combination of, I think, what Russell was as a quarterback, and then a little bit of Tua as far as what he can do creatively to make things happen if they're not there. But I don't know that he's going to need to with the talent that he's got out around him.
The one thing about Alabama is they consistently have created mismatches up front. I mean, their offensive line is so dominant every single year. It's never truly ever that I can recall been in questioning. Their defensive line always shows up, and you always have some round twos on their defensive front. And we all know the games are won in the trenches. And Alabama has done such an amazing job of making sure that they're stockpiling the type of guys. And they get going early, man. They get them going early. I do an 8th grade all-star game. And one of the kids that was in our game was 6'3", three-quarters, three-fourths. He's pushing 6'4". 320 pounds. And he was yoked up in the 8th grade. And he had already been offered to Alabama.
So he's 14 years old, probably.
He was 14 at the time. He's a senior this year.
6'3", and how much is he?
You'll hear about him. His name is Jaheim Otis.
Jeez.
You look him up. Ooh. But they get these kids, and they find them early. They find them early, man. 6'3", 320, 330 in the eighth grade was when I had him. And he was a pitcher. He was a swing three playing basketball. Kid's an athlete. Like not 6'3", 320, 330, sloppy. I'm talking like what you said when you saw AK Brady, like, where did you come from? I need your birth certificate. I need your backup birth certificate.
I wasn't trying to make any accusations.
I need your driver's license.
He just walked by and I was like, man, he looks like a more grown-ass man than I do. I got three kids over here. I'm looking at him going, I don't want any piece of that.
Hey, that kid's in the eighth grade. I said, look, we need your driver's license. We need your birth certificates, the original copy. We need your passport. We need everything that shows that you're over 16. Y'all didn't catch that.
He
was not 16.
So is it just area scouting? Is that what this comes down to? They've just got area scouts that all over the country.
No, what it comes down to is people seek you out. When you're the best, people want to be surrounded with the best. And I want to win.
And if Alabama's not recruiting you, you look at yourself and go, what am I doing wrong?
So the minute they start recruiting you or somebody tells you, like in this kid,
this kid is
in Mississippi. Like, think about this, fellas.
Yeah.
You think about blue chips, right? The way they found Neon Badeau. You remember when they found Shaquille O'Neal?
Yes.
Take a boat across that
Algiers.
Little creek.
Yeah. Algiers.
Make a left where the second cow is that's eating near the gate and all that. And then you'll see this red barn. He'll be in there. That's Jaheim Otis. Like, when we got him in the game, no one could get a hold of the kid. He did no camps. He made no public appearances. The only content that you could see or find on him was him with Coach Saban. That was the only content you could find on him. And we found him. And we got him to come to the game. I had him at Penn State. We didn't get him.
I think the other thing about Bama and recruiting is it's validation.
Yeah.
So if you're that high school head coach – And you could brag about it. Like, yeah, Nick Saban's recruiting this player. If Bama is recruiting a player on your team.
Now you could build your program.
Yeah. It validates you, especially for those programs that, you know, parochial schools, private schools that have the opportunity to recruit. It validates you. If you create that pipeline to Bama, it puts you on the map, so it works both ways. And even though, I know Nick Saban and his staff and everything, everyone grinds, but it validates you, I think, as a high school, as a coach, if you've developed a high school kid or use that as your pitch to other kids to get them to come to your high school. So it works both ways. And I think the other thing is that he can pitch. As much as it's about the success they have at the college level, you have two assistants who are former NFL head coaches in Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to come here and get coached by NFL coaches? I mean, whether you stay at Bama or not, that in and of itself for a sport that's highly developmental is huge, because you go and take that wherever you go, even if you don't make it at Bama, can transfer and play immediately. You're gonna get that coaching for at least a year or two. So I look at it and say, like, they've got everything working for them, where even former NFL head coaches will step down a level and say, yeah, I'll go call plays for Nick Saban to go through the car wash, or I'll go coach their offensive line. I mean, Brian Daboll, who's going to be a head coach, the play caller for the Buffalo Bills, won a national championship and bounced right back to the NFL. And is now going to be one of the hot names that will get a head coaching job after this season.
It's and we bring up the coaches. The program at Alabama, Nick Saban's program there, is so successful that unhirable coaches become hireable again.
Absolutely.
Just by being there.
Absolutely.
Think about it. Steve Sarkisian got fired for being a drunk. He's now the head coach of Texas.
Mike Locksley didn't do real well at New Mexico State. He goes there, and now he's the head coach of Maryland.
Lane Kiffin got fired on the tarmac. He's now the head coach at Ole Miss. Like all of these guys. Bill O'Brien's going to be head coach again
soon. It's borrowed time. And Nick Saban has built such the program, and the process is so perfected with him. These coaches are on borrowed time, and these players are on borrowed time.
You know what I love about Bill O'Brien, by the way, come down to the college level? And because there's obviously concern anytime you've got a changing coordinator or someone who's calling plays. But just to, like, come down to the college level, kick your feet up and go, oh, you think I'm a bad coach, huh? Let me just show you a little bit how this works at the college level with some of my scheme and some of my ability as a play caller. I mean, he dropped the absolute hammer on Manny Diaz and Miami to the point where, like, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I hope I feel confident about my ability scheme-wise, because you are going to get abused by Bill O'Brien. And it's not just the talent they have. It's the way they go about scheming things open. I mean, Jameson Williams, the long touchdown that Bryce Young threw out of their own end zone, as much as it's his speed that helps get him open, it was also the bunch formation, the way they released the coverage that Miami was in, and how they went about getting him so wide open where you could have put that ball like a punt out there and he would have caught it still be able to run for a touchdown. But it's almost like these NFL coaches are like, hey, next time you guys want to keep looking at these college coaches coming to the NFL level, maybe there's a reason they keep recycling us up at the NFL level, because we come down here and it's child's play, because that's what it looked like versus Miami.
That is unbelievable. It is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn with you here on FSR. Coming up next, though, here on the DP Show, there is some interesting comments. Somebody sticking up for one side of the football, and that person might surprise you. We'll get into that for you next here on Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Somewhere, Jenny Taft is jumping up and down, around in circles. Great camera work. Her, Gus Johnson, Joel Klatt, all caught grooving to House of Pain at Camp Randall. But LeVar Arrington, Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn with you here. It is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio.
There was one person in our crew who was unable to.
Well, listen, we're going to play that game. We have a very special game that we are going to play. Brady's got a story. Stories from the road with the Big Noon Boys coming up in about 20 minutes from now. Because don't ruin the surprise, because I really do want to take an honest guess. I want to compete against LeVar Arrington. We're going to try and guess.
All right.
A little guessing game here on Fox Sports Radio.
All right.
So,
all right.
Are you okay here in House of Pain, LeVar? I know it brings
up
bad memories.
We won.
Yeah, okay.
I'm good for now.
Fair enough. All right, there it is.
The game is over.
I'm good for now. By the way, I did see Ron Dane on the sidelines.
Nice.
So I told him we worked together. He told me to tell you hello. So I thought I'd pass that along.
Nice. Good friend of mine.
You and Ron Dane?
Oh yeah, we're friends after it all was said and done. You know we did the awards. You know that, Bray. You know, you do the awards deal and the All-American deals, the trips together, and you get to know one another, hang out. We did a USO tour together. I mean, you become really cool friends with people that you just literally hated when you were playing against them.
Well, I mean, think about it. Look, I work with Reggie and Matt. I mean, there was and when I first got into the USC matchup, I really didn't understand the rivalry and the magnitude of it until probably after, like, I had a conversation with Joe Montana, and we were kind of talking through it my true freshman year. And then after that, you started to kind of grow to have a hate. Like you really did. And I hate having hate in my heart. But, like, over time, you come to realize, like, no, guys, come on now. Come on now. You come to realize, like, look, you kind of move past the game itself. And you honestly, like, we become a team. Like, it's fun working with those guys. It's fun as you kind of see things outside of the world of football, like Matt's family grow or Reggie and watching his family grow. I don't get all warm and fuzzy on everyone, but like there is that element to it where, you know, you start to become like a family on your own, you know, traveling together, experiencing things together.
Yeah.
It's a cool deal. It really is.
Yeah. Well, listen,
I love experiencing things.
LeVar and I are just not even touching that.
A lot of things going on.
Yeah. Not even touching that. Listen, you know, well, there's a pit of vipers in the studio.
Yeah.
I'm not going near those.
No.
No.
What was the name of that movie with Samuel L. Jackson? Oh, okay.
Oh, Snakes on a Plane.
There was another. There was another one.
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah, there's that one, too.
It was called,
All right, so Tom Brady had some interesting comments recently, and I think this plays to all sides of the field here because, you know, we got the former quarterback and Brady Quinn. By the way, LeVar and I do appreciate it that you're slumming with us radio guys here after your TV performance over the past few days.
Yeah,
we appreciate
stop.
It. Thanks
Great
for
job.
Making, thanks for making time for
did
us
you see
here.
Me get sentimental on the text thread?
Yeah. I did
have a moment, man. I was proud.
I've realized that LeVar is the type of linebacker where he's sentimental, you know, sensitive off the field, but I don't ever want to see him in between the lines. Like, that's because he's got that switch.
Yeah, teammates, we're awesome, man.
Yeah.
Teammates, we're super good, man. I'm the dopest dude you'll meet. My opponent, I hate you.
Yeah.
I literally create a healthy hate if I'm going up against you.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like that fuels me to be able to do the things that I'm going to attempt to do to you.
And you were complimenting Brady on his television performance. And
that's correct.
You know,
and his hairstyle.
Yeah. And look, I had to, you know, I mean, and you know, I try and keep him as humble as possible. You know,
a couple of years ago,
I had him, you know, just outside my top 25 sports TV media guys.
Okay.
Just outside my top 25.
Right.
He's approaching the top 15 now, though.
Oh, wow.
So he's growing by 5 every single year.
Wow.
So, you know, in a couple of years from now, I think you're going to be top 5 in my book, Brady.
Oh, wow.
And I know you care about my my official TV media rankings.
I mean, that's
sports
right.
Radio.
There's not that many people in media, though. Golly.
I know. That was part of it. I think he actually said on our Big Noon kickoff crew, the Big Noon boys, I think he had me ranked 5.
Yes.
Which is out of 5.
Well, I've always told Brady, I said, of all the guys I've ever worked with, you're one of them.
Oh.
You know, that's just, there's that.
Number
but no,
5.
It is, but phenomenal job. You guys crush it as always, and we are going to have a fun little game about, you know, hot tubs during a Big Ten game coming up in about 15 minutes from now. Tom Brady, speaking of Brady's, Tom Brady, he had some interesting comments. I think this plays to both sides. We've got the quarterback in Brady Quinn. We got the defensive stud in LeVar Arrington. And Tom Brady actually defended the opposite side of the football.
I love this.
Take a listen.
I think the one thing about football that's changed over the years, which I think is really hard for someone like me who's played a long time to watch, is like it's not being taught the right way. Like, a quarterback should only throw the ball to certain places because your receiver is in danger of getting hit. For example, when I used to play against Ray Lewis, I wouldn't throw the ball to the middle of the field because he'd go after you and he would hit, like, and we didn't always have the biggest receivers, but he would hit him and knock him out of the game. And now every hard hit is a penalty on the defense. So I feel like they penalize defensive players for offensive mistakes. Mm. They've almost moved the protection of your opponent to you as opposed to where it should be, which is on yourself. Like, if you're a quarterback, you got to protect yourself and your players. It shouldn't be the responsibility of your opponent to protect you. It creates really bad habits for players because you feel like I can basically do anything. I could run and not slide. I can throw my receiver into any coverage and not have any repercussion for it. The only thing they're going to do is they're actually going to blame the defensive player for making a good, solid hit. And now the defensive player is going to feel like, oh, I can't do that, even though I feel like it was an offensive mistake.
So that was Bucs quarterback Tom Brady from the Buccaneers player chat a couple of days ago.
Always love Tom, man. Shouts out to Tom, man. It's my litter mate.
Yeah.
It's my litter mate, man. And to say anything bad about him would be unfair.
Defending the defense, though. defending the defense, though. How about that?
I think that is an amazing explanation. From a defensive guy's perspective, it is super cool to hear the GOAT say that because I totally feel the same way. It's like, I know you want to raise the level and the importance of safety. Listen, when CTE hit, it changed the whole narrative of how we looked at the game of football. And I understand that. And it scared the bejesus out of people. And I get that. But you don't have knee-jerk reactions where you basically are making rules where guys can't compete. I feel like it has gotten so borderline. I mean, we saw so many. We were talking about the possible launching or not launching, the possible targeting or not targeting in the Ohio State game. There yeah. were tons of examples of it. It happened in the Wisconsin game in Penn State. It happened in so many games. It happens in so many games. There is not a consistent way and a concise way of approaching how they're trying to govern guys getting hit. It's almost like if you want, and based off of what listening to Brady and what he's saying, and I agree with this, it's almost like you really want to come out and just say this. Don't hit them hard. Like, just come out and say, do not hit guys hard anymore. Like, wait for them to catch the ball and do your best to get them on the ground, considering they may be faster than you, they may be quicker than you, they may be bigger than you, they may be stronger than you, they may have all the attributes that are more than yours. But with all that being said, if you decide to take matters into your own hands and hit this man because you read the quarterback correctly, you read the pattern correctly, and you got to the spot before he did, and you chose to hit him at the same time that ball got there, you are hitting a defenseless receiver. Why did you throw the ball? Why? And here's another one. Here's another one that I really love. As a receiver, know where you're at. If you're a gazelle in the Serengeti, know where you're at, because there's lions and tigers and cheetahs and all kinds of stuff. Hyenas, they're out there to get you. You don't just go grab the ball if you know you're about to get licked. And the ones that do are the ones that you generally say, that's a man right there. He took the ball. He didn't get alligator arms. He didn't get scared. He took the ball. He made the catch. He took the hit. That's not how it is anymore. And I think it's kind of – it's sad because you're almost forced to choose one side of the ball. It's like, if I want to have a fair opportunity to do things at a high level, I'm going to play on the offensive side of the ball, because everything is geared and set up to protect them and to get them open to be able to have success. I think that's kind of lame.
No, I got to be honest with you, LeVar. I've been advocating and talking about how the game has changed in a manner in which I understand what we're calling for. We want it to be safer.
Yep.
The hard part about it is, you know, I understand the helmets, the helmet stuff and all that.
I get that.
And honestly, the reason why they want it to be safer and why they've implemented some of these rules, at least in regards to lowering their head to tackle, that has to do with trying to protect the defensive player as much as it is the offensive player. So I've actually kind of been more on the part of, I think we've done so much to protect the quarterbacks that we've almost allowed ourselves to then put defensive players in a bad spot. In particular, when quarterbacks are in the pocket, you go hit the quarterback, you can't land on top of them. And we've seen injuries occur where defensive players have had to spin to avoid landing on top of the quarterback, to not be penalized and then hurt themselves. And so that's the difficulty, is not only have we shifted the onus on when a player gets injured to really it being the responsibility of the defensive player, but we've also put defensive players more at risk in doing this, in forcing them to have to adjust in milliseconds or when they're going to hit a receiver and so forth. And so I'm with you. Like, I think if you're looking for a reason why offenses have continued to put up these huge numbers and everything else, it's because quarterbacks feel like they can throw in whatever window possible, knowing that these guys are not going to take the type of hits they used to take back when, like, Jack Tatum was playing, mm-hmm. or whoever you want to talk about. So they feel more emboldened to take those chances and take those shots. And so these stats go up and go higher, and it looks great because it's offensive football. And honestly, the biggest two reasons, forget safety, because we can push that narrative all we want. The reality is it's about business. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to protect quarterbacks because they know how important they are to the league and ensuring that those guys, those stars, are out there week in and week out, at least as much as possible. And they want high-scoring games because most people who watch football, they want to celebrate.
Yeah,
they want to see touchdowns. And then the other people you can blame, and Jonas, you can hop on this bandwagon. It's all the nerds out there, all the people playing fantasy because they want to see points and they want to see their player. So, of course, they want to try to create the game to allow them to have their players – you know, excel and put up a bunch of stats and fantasy and allow that to grow and get more people involved. Because if your tight end only has two catches for 20 yards because he, you know, you can't throw to him across the middle or he can't get off the line of scrimmage, you know, that's not fun for fantasy players. They want to see these guys have eight catches for 140, not two for 20. So at the end of the day, to me, it has as much to do about safety, really, with the business of football. And then also fantasy and how that's really impacted the game.
Well, and Brady's point to where when Tom Brady says, you know, they're bailing out the offense makes a mistake and they're getting bailed out because of a hit. Like if a guy comes in on a blitz and the running back doesn't pick up the block and he hits the quarterback and gets popped for 15 yards, all the focus is going to be on, man, what are you doing? Why are you hitting the quarterback up high like that?
Yeah.
Well, if you're the running back, pick up the block.
You have touched people's heads.
Yes.
Like, come on, Brett. You've seen this.
Yeah, I know.
You have touched their head. You didn't slap it. You didn't club it. It was not egregious or intentional.
Grazed
it. You're putting your hand up to try to go get the ball.
Yes.
And you're going through a blocker. Your hand touches their head. Here comes 15 yards.
It's crazy.
So like the Justin Fields play in preseason, which everyone wants to point to.
Oh,
right?
Man. That was not a penalty.
It shouldn't have been.
He hit his shoulder.
And one of three things happened. Either the line made the wrong declaration as to who are the five most dangerous they should be blocking.
And they should have chose him.
They should have chose him. He's on the line of scrimmage.
They should have chose him.
If you got five guys on the line of scrimmage, all right, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So you pick that guy because he looks like he might be coming.
He looks like he's coming.
Either the O-line messed up, the running back should have had him protection, which it looked like he was free releasing. So that means it would be on Justin Fields.
That ball has to come out.
And the ball's got to come out. So that hit is on him. It shouldn't be. He should be bailed out by a penalty. You know, they shouldn't penalize the defense for that. So that's the biggest issue that I have with it is I do think it's changed the way quarterbacks play now, where they feel like they're more emboldened to take these shots. Like, I remember making throws where the ball, it looks behind, people go, oh, it's inaccurate. No, it's because I didn't want my guy to get blown up by the inside linebacker or the safety who was barreling down. And my receiver's just running through a window because he either doesn't know or he's not experienced or coached enough to understand you got to throttle and sit in that window. You can't run through that window into a big collision, a big hit. Because when they do, it's a learning lesson. Because the next time they're in that same situation, they realize I need to throttle and sit in this window instead of running right through it into a guy who's waiting to clean my clock.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing is there's even the misconception of like how the receiver and the quarterback, how those dynamics work with throwing the football, especially in zone coverages.
Can I just say this? I would have died on the vine if these rules were in play when I played.
Oh, man. Dick Butkus would have never existed.
Most of the guys resting in Canton the defensive side of the
existed.
Ball would have never existed.
Yeah.
You would have never had a career.
You'd be a professional wrestler.
You brought up Tatum and all those guys. Like, you think about Deacon Jones, who created the sack. He was basically giving guys concussions from head slaps every single play.
Lawrence Taylor.
Lawrence would have been and he just – brutalized guys. Like, he just was more athletic than everybody. But you get guys like, I don't know, because they would have been penalizing him on the sacks the way he was hitting. I mean, Ray Lewis would have been ejected from every game. Every game. You would have been ejecting guys like Ray Lewis from every game. Ronnie Lott, every game. They're getting ejected. Mel Blount, those guys were back then, they were clotheslining dudes.
Steve Atwater.
Ejected. They would have called targeting on guys like Ronnie Lott, Steve Atwater, John Lynch.
And look, to Brady's,
you name them.
To Brady's point, the offensive player, you know, putting his helmet down, you know, like there, Walter Payton. How many Walter Payton, Earl Campbell runs do you look back on and go,
bro?
Oh, that would have been a penalty.
And
how are you?
And they don't. They generally never throw flags on running backs for lowering their heads.
Hardly ever.
You never see it. When they first instituted the drop your head rule, they threw it a couple times. They do not throw the flag on running backs lowering their head and lowering the boom, so to speak, on the defense side of the ball. You don't see it. You don't see it. But here's the thing. I saw Alonzo Spellman one time, one of the biggest dudes I've ever seen. I might have told this story before. He body slammed Jeff George. We were playing Dallas in Dallas. He body slams Jeff George to the ground after he's released the ball. All right? The ball is gone. He proceeds to grab him because he didn't go to the ground with Jeff George. He grabbed him by the collar of his jersey and started. He had to have drugged that man at least 15 to 20 yards, like he was taking him to his cave and was going to store him for food for later to eat. And they did not call not one thing.
Well, you know, it's Alonzo Spellman.
There should be a level of brutality in a full contact
sport. That's acceptable.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
And that might sound like, to all you soft people out there that have become so soft and inundated with being sissies, that might have offended you, and I don't care. Yeah. There should be a level of brutality in the sport, because you know what? We celebrate when an offensive lineman pulls around and demolishes, obliterates a dude on their pool, like, Larry Allen. Like, okay, but what if Larry Allen doesn't get there, and that guy that was supposed to get blown up and obliterated by Larry Allen ends up blowing up Troy Aikman, and then he never plays ever again, like, ever. Now there's a problem,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Now there's a problem.
I remember.
Which, by the way, you know,
yeah,
I did blow him up.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
It was a forever blow up, too.
That, yeah, I've heard about that,
It was the last one ever. It was the last time Troy Aikman was ever blown up, ever, in life. I used to blow up dudes, man. I blew up Cordell Stewart. I'm actually responsible for Ben Roethlisberger's Hall of Fame career.
For people listening, by blowing up, he means tackle them really hard. Just want to clarify.
To all the sissies out there.
Well, just in case they're taking things literally, like last night's execution.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't actually put a bomb inside someone.
Let me issue my apology before I get a call from all of the complaints that come in. I apologize. This was not a terroristic threat that I was throwing out there. I was using a slang term from my book of Ebonics.
LeVar Arrington. Not Ted Kaczynski. It's not Ted Kaczynski. It is LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox here
sissies.
The Dan Patrick
Show. Get out of my face.
Here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so coming up next, we are going to have a game show. It is called Who Was in the Hot Tub During a Big Ten Matchup Game Show, and it's all yours next here on The Dan Patrick Show.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
It's the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox with you here on FSR. Coming up, top of next hour, a little over 10 minutes from now, there's some interesting comments about a quarterback in the NFL from a former player that we are going to get into. Some very interesting stuff here, and not a good look on this quarterback. So we will have that for you here coming up at top of next hour, a little over 10 minutes from now here on the Dan Patrick Show. So it is game show time.
Yes.
And Brady Quinn, he loves hosting game shows.
Yes.
Like a huge
fan. He's got
fan.
That game show looking voice. You
yeah.
Know?
Oh, I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah. Welcome to the show. I'm Brady Quinn, yeah. And this is called The Dating Game.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to smile a lot. You
this
know?
Is called
smile a lot and then say a few things.
A win with Quinn.
I know none of you guys are as good looking as I am, yeah. But we're going to take a chance on seeing if we can
here
find
we
your love.
So Brady Quinn, you've got yourselves a little bit of a game show here, a story from the road. There was a crew member who watched Penn State, Wisconsin from the hot tub for the third quarter. All right. So the name of this game show, obviously a lot of thought put into this. The name of this game show is which member of the Fox Big Noon crew was in a hot tub during Penn State, Wisconsin? And LeVar Arrington and myself will be the contestants here, Brady. So go ahead, give us the details and we'll each try and guess who it was.
Okay. This individual has some back issues. Okay.
Okay.
So much so, it was actually injured while getting out of one of the vehicles.
Oh, wow.
Getting out of one of the cars. Mm. This individual, how can I put this? He played college football.
Okay.
Okay.
Good
played
hint.
College football.
Good hint.
Good hint. This individual, maybe older than you think.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Huh.
And so you've got some options now. You've got some options based on, I guess if you want to include me as part of this, even though I guess I'll help you out. I was not in the hot tub in the third quarter.
Oh, that's going to be my guess.
Game. Yeah, yeah. So you've got Rob Stone, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, or Bob Stoops to select from.
Okay. LeVar, you go first.
Oh, I got to go with Matt Leinart.
That's insulting.
I got to go with Matt Leinart.
I actually like what he did there. Huh. You know, remember when Leinart was in Arizona, he had some of those hot tub parties.
Yeah.
You know, some of that stuff
got
out.
Oh,
I
know
see
all
that.
About Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
I lived in the East Bay with Matt Leinart. I know a few things about Matt Leinart.
Amen.
Shouts out to Matt.
Hey, man. That guy,
sometimes
he ran this town. I'll
sometimes you could throw your back out if you're Matt Leinart.
Definitely
if you did,
could.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Something I can't relate to. All right, here we go. I am
but
going
you can
to guess
twist your hip.
That is a good point. I am going to guess. See, because I was going to say Bob Stoops, but it's his first weekend doing Fox games. I don't think he feels comfortable enough.
I don't know that Stoops would get. Get in the hot tub around these dudes. It's got to be somebody who's confident enough to get
right.
in the hot tub.
All right, I'm going to go Reggie Bush.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a better – that's a good one. But see, I think it's Reggie's knees.
Okay.
It's not Reggie's back, but I could be wrong.
All right.
That's a good call. It's a good call.
All right.
And the winner is
– It's the host.
Jonas Knox with
yeah!
Reggie Bush. That is right. That is right. That is right.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes! Yes.
Well done. Well done.
Well, Reggie Bush lifts weights. He's got a six pack at 40 years old.
Yeah,
I mean,
Brady, what the hell is he doing in a hot tub during the third quarter?
His back was acting up. It was an injury apparently. Getting out of the car, I tweaked it, and the Wisconsin athletic training staff, they were great. Took care of him, got him the hot tub, had some heating pads as well.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that is a cush
Talk
gig,
about
man.
Pampered.
That is a cush gig.
Jeez.
You see, like.
That's why I couldn't get on that show. Golly.
That is, wow, you know what? Feels good to be a winner, man. Feels great. Feels wonderful.
I was kind of jealous, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
really
that's
was.
A hell of a move. All right,
it
we
is.
Got more Hour 3 here, the Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio.